Chapter 23. Library of Congress, Washington, D.C. Their first lead into Winston Blaylock's life prior to his arrival in Africa came in the form of an old friend of Selma's, Julianne Severson, who'd taken over the Library of Congress's Special Collections Division after Selma's departure. Severson met Sam and Remy at the Second Street Researchers' entrance of the Jefferson Building. The other two buildings that made up the library's campus, the Adams and the Madison, sat a block to the east and the south, respectively. After shaking hands, Severson said, "It's a pleasure having you, Mr. and Mrs. Fargo." "Sam and Remy," said Remy. "Wonderful. I'm Julianne. I've been a fan of yours for quite some time. You probably don't realize this, but your adventures spark a lot of interest in history, particularly among children." "Thank you, Julianne," Sam replied. She handed them a pair of laminated badges attached to neck lanyards. "Reader identification cards," she explained with a shrug and a smile. "All part of the CSP, Collections Security Program. Ever since 9/11, the protocols are much more strict." "We understand. If you'll follow me," they started walking. "I'll be helping you personally while you're here." "That's kind of you," Remy said, "but we don't want to take up your time." "Nonsense. The library runs smoothly on its own. My assistant will handle anything that comes up." Severson turned up a marble stairway and Sam and Remy followed. "How much do you know about the library?" "We've visited several times, but never as researchers, believe it or not," Remy replied. The tour alone was a breathtaking experience, Sam and Remy knew. The oldest federal institution in the country, the Library of Congress was founded in 1800 and located in the Capitol Building until 1814, when British troops lit the building on fire and destroyed the library's core collection of 3,000 volumes. A year later, Congress voted to reestablish the LOC and purchase Thomas Jefferson's personal library of some 6,000 books. The library's collection had since grown significantly. 33 million books and printed materials, 3 million recordings, 12,500,000 photographs, 5,300,000 maps, 6 million pieces of sheet music, and 63 million manuscripts, all representing almost 500 languages, some 145 million items altogether on 745 miles of bookshelves. "It almost seems more like a cathedral than a library," Remy said. "The architecture is..." "Awe-inspiring," Severson finished. "Exactly. The marble floors and columns, the arches, the vaulted ceilings, the artwork." Severson smiled. "I think Selma once referred to this place as part cathedral, part museum, part gallery, with a little bit of library thrown in for good measure. I suspect grandeur was foremost on the Congress's collective mind in 1815. After the British sacked everything, I imagine there was a we'll-show-them mentality during the Reconstruction. Bigger, better, more ostentatious. Architectural nose-thumbing, if you will," Remy said. Severson laughed. "Are we going to the main reading room?" Sam asked. "No, we're going to the second floor. Rare book and special collections. The main room is hosting a tour of local elementary schools. It's going to be a bit wild in there today." They reached a door numbered 239 and walked through. "If you want to take a seat at the work table, I'll man the workstation. While our catalog has gotten more user-friendly over the years, it might be easier if I do the legwork." "Okay. Selma emailed me some of the documents and gave me a little bit of background. Winston Lloyd Blaylock, wife named Ophelia, believed to be in the United States prior to March 1872. Anything else?" "We have a rough physical description," said Remy. "Everything helps. 6 feet 4 inches tall, around 250 pounds probably.
Also, he carried a .44 caliber Henry rifle," Sam added. "As I understand it, those weren't very common."
"Certainly not as common as Winchesters, Remingtons, or Springfields.
The Henry wasn't standard issue during the Civil War, but many Union soldiers used their own money to buy one. The government did, however, issue them to scouts, raiding parties, and special forces units. The Confederate soldiers hated the Henry. It could hold 16 rounds, and a trained soldier could fire off 28 in a minute. Back then, that was as close to a hand-carried machine gun as you could get. Do we know if Blaylock was adept with it? According to our source, he was a crack shot. Severson nodded. She started typing, and for the next 5 minutes there was silence, save for the clacking of the keyboard's keys and the murmur of fascinating or interesting from Severson. Finally, she looked up. I have a service record here, a microfiche copy from the National Archives. Two sources, actually. The CMSR, or Compiled Military Service Record, and publications M594 and M861, which are the Service of Military Units in Volunteer Union Organizations for both the Union and the Confederacy. Any mention of Blaylock? I've got 59 entries, in fact. Since Blaylock carried a Henry rifle, let's start with the Union list first. Severson started typing again. The problem is, many of the abstract entries list only the first name, middle initial, and last name. I've got several W. Blaylocks and two W. L. Blaylocks. The first one has an attachment, a medical record. Did your Blaylock have any wounds? Not that we know of. Smiling, Severson tapped the screen, clearly excited by what she'd found. Right leg amputated at Field Hospital during the Battle of Antietam. Guess that rules him out, huh? Oh, sorry, that sounded morbid, didn't it? It's okay, Sam said. You and Selma share the same love of research. We're used to it. Okay, here's the other entry. Well, this is interesting. This Blaylock was detached from the Union Army in September 1863, but there's no reason listed. He wasn't transferred or wounded, just detached. What does that mean? Remy asked. I'm not sure. Let me see if I can find more than an abstract on him. 15 minutes later, Severson again looked up from her workstation. Got it. A full service record. This might be your man, William Lind Blaylock. That's close, Sam said. Conspicuously close. His physical description is close as well. 6 feet 4 inches, 210 pounds. It wouldn't be hard to 4 inches, 210 pounds. It wouldn't be hard to gain 30 or 40 pounds after leaving the army, Remy observed. Severson was frowning. Parts of the record are missing. I've got early details of his training and unit assignments, promotions, campaigns he was involved in, evaluations. But after 1862, his assignments are all listed as supplementary service. That sounds very James Bondish, said Remy. You're not far off, Severson replied. When it comes to Civil War-era records, the term supplementary service is usually associated with guerrilla units, what we'd call special forces today. Sam said, like Loudoun Rangers, Quantrill's Raiders, the Kansas Jayhawkers. Severson nodded. Right. Combine that with this Blaylock's mysterious detachment from the Union Army in 1863, and I think you're looking at a soldier turned spy. The afternoon wore on as Severson sat at her workstation typing, jotting notes, and occasionally sharing her progress with Sam and Remy. At 4 p.m., Severson stopped and looked at her watch. Oh my, time flies. It's almost closing time. There's no reason you should have to sit here for this. Why don't you go back to your hotel and have dinner? I'll call you if I find anything. Correction, when I find something. Please, Julianne, you go home as well, Remy said. I'm sure you have other plans. Nope. My roommate will feed my cat, and I'll grab dinner here. Sam said, we can't. Are you kidding? This is like going to Disney World for me. That sounds familiar, Remy said with a smile. Are you sure you and Selma aren't related? We're part of a secret society. Librarians in arms, Severson replied. You two go and let me do my thing. I'll be in touch. As they did every time they stayed or passed through Washington, Sam and Remy had booked the Robert Mills suite at the Hotel Monaco. 20 minutes after leaving the Library of Congress, their taxi slowed before the Monaco's red awning-covered steps. The doorman had the door open a moment after the car stopped rolling. Sam and Remy got out. The Monaco, once the U.S. General Post Office building and now a registered National Historic Landmark, is located in Washington's 19th-century neighborhood known as Penn Quarter, within walking distance of the Mall, the Smithsonian American Art Museum, the J. Edgar Hoover Building, the U.S. Navy Memorial, and five-star restaurants enough to keep a gourmand enraptured for years. Welcome, Mr. and Mrs. Fargo, the doorman said. He walked to the rear of the cab and collected their luggage from the trunk. I'll have your bags brought up immediately. If you'd like to step inside, I believe you'll find the concierge is expecting you. 10 minutes later, they were in their suite. Still fatigued from their African odyssey, they took an hour-long nap, then showered, dressed for dinner, and walked down to the street. They found the Monaco's restaurant, the Postmoderne Brasserie, around the corner on 8th Street through a carriageway portal set into the building. After a glance at the wine list and menu, they settled on a bottle of 2007 Domaine de la Quille Muscadet, a zesty, crisp wine from the Loire Valley, arugula salad with basil, mint, and parmesan, and steamed bouchot mussels in white wine, saffron, mustard, and garlic confit. As was visiting Monaco itself, the choice of fare was something of a tradition for the couple. Remy took a sip of wine. She closed her eyes and let out a sigh. I have a confession, Sam. I love adventure as much as the next gal, but there's something to be said for good food and a warm bed with clean sheets. You'll get no argument from me. Remy's iPhone chimed. She checked the screen, then set it aside. Selma. She found another Aztec symbol in Blaylock's journal. Before leaving for Washington, they'd asked her to focus her search on anything that remotely resembled the Mikitsli glyph. For Selma's reference, Remy had downloaded from the Internet a high-resolution image of the 24-ton Aztec calendar, the Sunstone, on display in Mexico City's National Museum of Anthropology. That makes 4 symbols so far, Remy said. Any discernible pattern? Any annotations near the symbols? None. She says they're isolated. At some point you're going to have to give me a primer on all things Aztec. I'll see what I can do. There aren't many ancient peoples with a more complex history and culture. Even after a full semester of it, I felt like I'd barely scratched the surface. Every symbol has multiple meanings, and every god multiple identities. It doesn't help that most of the historical accounts are biased toward the Spanish. Victors write the history, Sam said. Sadly true. Sam took a sip of wine. It seems a safe bet that Rivera and whoever he's working for share an obsession with Blaylock, even separated by 140 years. Don't ask me how, though. The Aztec angle can't be a coincidence. Or are we too close to the forest? I don't think so, Sam. It's the one common denominator that links Blaylock, the ship, the bell, and Rivera. The question is, where do the middle two fit into it? The waiter appeared with their salads. Sam said, we still don't know how Rivera got interested in the Shenandoah in the first place. Hell, we don't even know if it's the Shenandoah. Aside from Ophelia, which is Blaylock's own invention, the ship had 2 other names. The Sea King and El Majidi. We're not only dealing with what, but also when. What if they stumbled onto something to do with Blaylock? Another journal or some letters, for example. Worse still, what if Selma's right and Blaylock's bout with malaria left him insane, and the doodling in his journal is pure fantasy? In other words, Sam said, We could all be on a wild goose chase. After dinner, they shared a wedge of strawberry rhubarb pudding cake and finished with 2 cups of decaf Ethiopian coffee. They were back in their room shortly before 9. The message light on the telephone was blinking. Remy said, "I knew I forgot something. I didn't give Julianne our cell phone numbers." Sam dialed into the hotel's voicemail system and turned on the speaker. "Sam, Remy, this is Julianne. It's about 8:30. I'm going to go work from home, but I'll be back at the library by 6 tomorrow morning. Come by around 8. I think I've found something."